You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Claire Suddeth writes in her latest article for Bloomberg Businessweek that, quote, over the past 50 years, women have achieved an astounding level of equality in the United States. They've become astronauts and U.S. Supreme Court justices and have come so close to winning the presidency, it's easy to forget that until 1974, they couldn't get a credit card unless a man co-signed the application. But by one measure, women have made little progress over the past 20 years, and that's the wage gap, which is currently 80% of what men working full-time make. Her article, Why Can't Your Company Just Fix the Gender Wage Gap?, brings Claire Suddeth to our show now. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
It is astonishing to think that women in this country needed a male co-signer on a credit card just 43 years ago. Sounds almost Saudi Arabian.
I know. I was not around 43 years ago, and I did not know that until I started researching this article.
Aren't women today more likely to hold a bachelor's or a master's degree than men?
They are more likely to hold bachelor's or master's degrees, but for some reason, you know, they end up choosing fields that are lower paying than men, and that leads to this persistent wage gap that hasn't changed since the 1990s.
Do they choose them, or is that where the jobs are available?
I think that there's some discussion about that. Obviously, women do choose what they're going to major in. But when you look at it statistically, over and over again, the fields that are predominantly, female tend to pay less. So it's a sort of chicken and egg situation.
So a pediatrician or a gynecologist is paid less than a different
oncologist.
Kind of medical specialist?
Yes, yes. But at the same time, so there's sort of two ways to look at the wage gap. I'm going to back up a little bit, but essentially, you know, the number that you hear a lot is 80% or 80 cents on the dollar, and that is primarily due to women being clustered into these lower paying fields. I think of the 20 most common careers for men and the 20 most common careers for women, only four of them overlap. So we're still a fairly gender segregated economy.
And what are those four that overlap? Supreme Court justice. What else?
They're exactly. They're quite broad. They're managers, store clerks, that sort of thing. But when you look at it, you know, you still have about 79% of teachers are women. 80% of computer programmers are men. You can go into, manufacturing is largely male.
Doctors, male. Although there are more women doctors, but nurses tend to only be women.
Right. Nurses tend to be women doctors. Medicine is actually more mixed than other fields. But even within that, when you look more closely at medicine, fields like gynecology, pediatrics are female. Oncology, anesthesiology are male.
So what complicates the situation you're saying is not that if you and I have the same job, you'll be paid 80% less, but you are less likely to have the same job that I have.
Right. Although also what you said is true. There is a job-to-job gap, which we can get to in a minute. But most of the 80%.
Oprah does get paid more than me.
Oh, yes, she does. There are exceptions to every rule.
Aren't women today more likely, to be the primary breadwinner, the one half of all U.S. households? Do we know when so many women began to take on the role of primary breadwinner?
I don't have that exactly in front of me, but it's been that way for a good, 10 or 15 years. I think it starting in the 70s when you started to see the divorce rate rise, then children oftentimes stayed with the woman, so that would be the head of household.
Although there's a long history, you point out, to the pay gap. For example, you write that the U.S. Treasury employed 500 female clerks in 1869 and paid them one half the rate that men were paid.
Yeah.
Were they aware of that at the time?
Well, it was published in the paper, so that's how I found it. I'm not sure how aware they were of it at the time, but there was very frank discussion. If you look back, in the 1800s, early 1900s, just they would come right out and say, we're going to pay women less than men. There was a very sort of staunch discussion during World War I, which was the first war where men went off to war and they still needed women to fill these jobs that they left behind. That also happened in World War II, but World War I was really the first time. And there was a labor board that published a list of acceptable jobs that women could have in wartime. And when you look at them, they're quite masculine for that time period. You know, it's like electric machine operator.
Mm. Rosie the Riveter.
Exactly. Yes. She was the other war, but yes, essentially. But they had to have this discussion. These are the jobs that it was okay to have women do during World War One. And then there were labor disputes where the owners of these companies or factories were like, great, okay, well, we're just going to pay them less because they're women. And the unions would say, well, this is going to be a problem because when the men come back from war and they want these jobs back, if you've suddenly, you know, halved the pay for this job, you're not going to want to pay the men the same amount that you had been paying them before. And so labor unions actually pushed for equal pay. And they were sometimes successful. So women during wartime tended sometimes to make the same as men.
But then after the war, things were reversed.
Yes. Yes. Men came back, took the jobs back. Women went back into the home. That happened in World War One and to a lesser extent in World War Two.
Haven't arguments like, well, men are the primary breadwinners in a family, so they have to be paid more, or you are more likely to become pregnant and leave, so I can't pay you as much?
Well, that's illegal, but if the women...
Well, the laws would make the 80% gap
exactly,
illegal.
Exactly. So technically, no. You know, what is legal and what actually happens are oftentimes quite different in this world. And when I talked to women for this article, I heard that over and over again, that women had either been told that explicitly or had risen high enough in their own field where they were privy to these conversations. I spoke to a woman in Hollywood who was at a table when they were discussing whether to hire this one woman to, I think, direct a show or direct or produce, I can't remember. And the executive in charge was like, yeah, but, you know, she just had a kid. I'm not sure if she really wants this. And she's like, well, she came in for the job interview, so clearly she's interested.
They also would argue that women are more subject to mood swings because of their menstrual
cycles.
What do
you
mean? I remember that being argued in Congress. Not that long ago.
There was a discussion with Megyn Kelly in the last debate that was somehow related to that. I have heard that. I would prefer that people sort of rethink that stance. I don't think that that is correct. I think when you walk around in the world, you can't tell what woman is, you know, on her period or not. And so if you don't know, why are you holding this stereotype?
I'm speaking to Claire Suddeth, S-U-D-D-A-T-H, about her latest article for Bloomberg Businessweek called Why Can't Your Company Just Fix the Gender Wage Gap? Well, hasn't the government tried? Gender discrimination at work become illegal under the Equal Pay Act of 1963?
It did, yes. John F. Kennedy signed it.
Mm-hmm. And then there are similar other laws since then. So why does it persist?
Well, so the Equal Pay Act of 1963 says that you can't discriminate in pay based on gender. But obviously, employers, when they're hiring, are allowed to, I would say, discern differences between employees. You know, take away gender. You have two men or two women, and you are going to offer them the same job. You may offer one salary and one a different salary. It would be slightly different. That is perfectly legal.
And she won't even know.
Right, exactly. Well, anyone, you know, when you get hired for a job, generally you're not totally aware of what your salary is in relation to your new coworkers.
Just last year, didn't the Obama administration mandate that companies with more than 100 employees report salary data broken down by race, ethnicity, and gender?
They did. And actually, that's something that has been going on if you are a federal contractor where you do work with the federal government, which many large companies do. They've had to report that data for quite a long time. And that's through that data we can see only through the companies that work with the federal government. But that's most large banks, you know, Facebook, Google, et cetera. So it gives us a lot of information. We can see this pay gap actually happening. So the Obama law is essentially saying everyone has to do this. So we can really get a look at what's happening.
But you found that despite the efforts by President Obama and also efforts at state level, an American Enterprise Institute analysis found that the average pay for women in the Obama administration was about 11% lower than men's.
It is. It is.
And so there was the 89%.
Yeah, exactly. Gap there. I think, you know, I would guess that most of that is, again, attributable to the clustering. The Trump administration, at the time when I wrote this, this hadn't come out yet, but since then, the American Enterprise Institute has analyzed the Trump administration, and they have a 37% wage gap, which is median pay for all men and all women who work in the White House. So it went from around 11%. Obama's would actually change from year to year. Sometimes it would be 12 or 13, sometimes it would be 10 or 11, to 37% now.
What about on the state level?
I think that changes from state to state, but you would probably see something quite similar.
But some states, do some states have laws that that make it illegal to have wage discrimination?
Yeah. So
does that really have much of an impact?
There are a few states, not many, but there are a handful of states that have laws that go beyond the federal laws. I think a California law that went into effect this year or last year requires companies to justify when they have employees who do what they call substantially similar work, why they're paid differently. Massachusetts won't let you negotiate a new hire's pay based on their old salary. The idea is that if you do have a gap or you are underpaid and your new salary is based on your old salary, that gap follows you from job to job. New York City actually has the same law going into effect at the end of October.
We've been contacted by a number of our listeners. Brandon from Greenwich, Connecticut wants to know, to what extent does having children affect women's wage gap?
That is an excellent question, and it is not good for them from a wage gap perspective. There are studies out there that say specifically college-educated women between the ages of 22 and 27 have the smallest gap. They make almost the same, not quite the exact same, but almost the same as their male peers. It's about, I think, 97%. And then as they move up in their career and as they age and probably have children, that gap widens significantly. And when women do have children, they are oftentimes more likely to either drop out of the workforce for a few years, switch to part-time, stagger their hours so that they may be working from home, answering emails late at night once the kids are in bed, that sort of thing. And then that is when you get into the discussions that you referenced of people saying, well, she just had a kid. Do we really want to give her this job that involves a lot of travel or that involves a lot of late nights? And sometimes that decision is made for her.
Todd from Port Jefferson says that the Department of Labor shows that men are 12 times more likely to die on the job. Men are something around 90% of those employed in high fatality jobs.
That is true. I mean, men work mostly, you know, when you think of the more dangerous fields, manufacturing, construction, you know, firefighting, those are male dominated. That is very true.
Did they tend to be paid more because of the risk factor?
I think firefighters, definitely. I would say yes, but I don't know how much that bump in pay is specifically attributed to the danger of you know, machine work rather than something else.
I'm speaking with Claire Suddeth. Her article, Why Can't Your Company Just Fix the Gender Wage Gap, was in Bloomberg Business Week, and we will continue our conversation after this. We are back with Claire Suddeth. Her article in Bloomberg Business Week is Why Can't Your Company Just Fix the Gender Wage Gap? And you begin talking about a company. Your article starts with Citigroup Incorporated's annual meeting in New York City this April. After he delivered some good news on a progressive agenda the bank has taken over the past year, then Citi Chairman Michael O'Neill was confronted by Natasha Lamb. Who is she and what did she ask Mr. O'Neill?
So this is a great story. Natasha Lamb is a partner at this Boston investing company called Arjuna Capital. And they're quite progressive. They also do a lot of environmental work, that sort of thing. But she has been systematically submitting shareholder proposals on the behalf of some of Arjuna's clients for the past couple years. They first did a batch of tech companies, and then this year they're going after large banks, asking them to analyze and disclose any discrepancy in pay that they have between men and women at their company. That can be sort of at the big level, where you may have men clustered into the higher fields within, you know, Citigroup, for example. But also, she's actually asking for what she calls this pay job-to-job discrepancy, where, you know, according to a study, I think, in finance specifically, women in the same job make 6.4% less than men. At Citigroup, PayScale, which is a sort of compensation data company, put that number at 6%. So she was asking them, is this true? Could you come out with a number to say whether or not this is what you found? Citigroup said that they did not want to. The shareholders voted it down. So it's not happening.
Well, the study she cited was by a job search website, Glassdoor. And that showed that when education and experience are taken into account, women in finance still make about 6.4% less than the men with the same jobs.
Yes.
And so it doesn't matter if you have a better education than I?
No. I mean, it's all things being equal. So if we have the same education level, the same number of years of experience, the same hours that we work, women across the U.S. economy still make about 5% less than men job to job in the same industry at the same level.
But aren't most of the senior managers at banks and tech companies men, while the support staff and banking and tech companies are made up mostly of women?
That's true. And that's when you...
That skews the data, doesn't it?
Not for that figure. So this is what is so complicated about the pay gap. When you talk about that, the 20% gap, that 80% figure in the U.S., that is, you know, most CEOs are male, you know, most, you know, people at managerial or higher levels may be male within a company, something like that. That's the bigger gap. But even when you ignore that or just put that to the side and you just look at, okay, of the men and women who are managers, of the men and women who are in the service sector, of the men and women who are firefighters, across the economy, it's still 5%. And the Glassdoor study was saying in finance specifically, it's 6.4%. Actually, in computer science, it's huge. All things being equal, education, experience, job title, everything, the salary for a computer programmer drops by 28% if that programmer is a woman.
Can a man with just a high school diploma make more money than a woman with some college education or even an associate's degree if they're doing the same job?
Yeah, that is actually true. And that is due largely to the clustering that we talked about before.
And should I assume that there are even wider pay discrepancies when the gap is broken down by race?
Yes. You know, when we're talking about this pay gap and this clustering, this is all men and all women. But if you look at it in terms of race, it gets even quite more significant, I think.
So are women of color paid even less than the 80%?
Yes, and it's largely due to the fact that they tend to be in lower paying positions and lower paying fields. I think a good example is Black and Hispanic women are more than twice as likely than white women to work in the service sector. So, you know, waitresses, cashiers, and so they're, the pay gap for those ethnicities is 63% for Black women, I think, and Latinas, it's 57%. They make 57% of what white men make. And the reason why white men are used as sort of the standard is they're the largest subgroup within the labor force. Asian men actually make a bit more.
Does that apply when they work for in government jobs?
Are you asking about the clustering or the...
Well, for example, the city, I would say the city employs a larger number of minority people than white males. So the women and men. So should I assume that even New York City or New York State or the state governments in elsewhere have similar kinds of wage gaps?
For the most part, yes. This is something that is common across the board in our society and our economy. So while when you look at every single city employee in New York or in the state, there may be quite a significant representation of minorities, but they're oftentimes in lower paying fields or in, you know, divisions that are not nearly as high paying as, you know, perhaps the mayor's office or something like that.
You write, salaries, of course, aren't based on a set of immutable scientific facts. Are female-dominated occupations worth less to society?
Yeah.
Did you answer your question?
I wanted to ask that question so that people could think about it on their own. I think an interesting sort of bit of information that I learned is that there have been studies out there that look at wages in an industry over time. And when you have a substantial number of women moving into a field, so that could be biology, design, teaching is actually one of them. You know, in the early 1900s, a much higher percentage of elementary and high school teachers were men, and now it's almost 80% are women. When they move into these fields in numbers, the pay adjusted for inflation and all of that actually declines.
For men as well as women?
For everyone in that field. Why that is, I couldn't tell you. I could speculate, but that's a fact. And also, the reverse seems to be true. There are fewer examples of women being in a field and then leaving, but a good one to look at is actually computer science. You know, when it first started in the 60s, 70s, and up until sort of the early 80s, it was a much sort of lower level job akin to typing or filing. Women were much more prominent. You know, there's the movie Hidden Figures, and at the end of the movie, you know, one of the women goes to work in the computer department because they don't really know what it is and they just let her do it. There were much more women in the fields. The pay was much lower. In 1984, close to, but not quite, about 40% of computer science degrees were earned by women. Then things changed, technology took off. We think about it as this way to design our future. And now the number of women earning computer science degrees is 18%. And there are many discussions that people have had about women not being well represented in STEM or in Silicon Valley.
My guest is Claire Suddeth, whose article, Why Can't Your Company Just Fix the Gender Wage Gap, is in the current issue of Bloomberg Business Week. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. You were for a time an arts and culture writer at Time Magazine.
I was.
Was Time Magazine a good employer?
Time Magazine was a great employer. I loved every minute of it.
But how did you wind up going from arts and culture to writing about this?
I worked at Time, and then I worked at Business Week, which does, I've been there about 5 years now, and they do less arts and culture coverage. But I came on and sort of found ways to write about things that I was interested in, and I'm a woman, and in my life and career, I had noticed this happening to my peers and friends.
What about in the arts? Does the gap apply again? Because for a long time, of course, there were the woman of real distinction in the various arts were rather outnumbered considerably by males, whether it was the visual arts or music or whatever. But that has narrowed a bit. Do we see still a wide range of differences between men and women?
Yes, I think when you look at the figures that make the news are often for the top Hollywood stars, and usually men are still paid more. There was quite a big kerfuffle recently with the Wonder Woman movie, which was a bit taken out of context because at the time that she negotiated her salary, she wasn't yet famous, and it was part of a block of movies that was similar to men. So that was maybe not the best example, but she's still got, I think, $300,000 for this enormous summer blockbuster.
On the other hand, I just read, and I've forgotten the name of the woman who reported this, her co-stars decided to take less money than...
Jennifer Lawrence, yeah. Yes. Jennifer Lawrence has been very vocal about this. When she found out that she was vastly underpaid for the roles that she had. She oftentimes co-stars with Bradley Cooper. He's oftentimes paid more. Other of her co-stars offered to take less money to make it equal. Hollywood also has the clustering problem. I think about 4% of Hollywood film directors are women. When you get into sort of the production and directing part of making a movie, it's very male-dominated. And I've talked to women who work in Hollywood who say that it is quite hard to get a film or television show made that stars a woman or is produced or directed by a woman. There are,
despite the fact that Wonder Woman is a monster success.
Right. Well, that may change. I mean, I think part of this is for companies and industries, this is a huge blind spot for them. I mean, there is all this money to be made making stuff for women, selling stuff to women. Women are interestingly have a disproportionate amount of the consumer spending in this country is done by women. So, you know, maybe we should pay a bit more attention to them.
It's ironic that during the years of the studio system, there were women's movies, and they sustained the studios in many years because they brought in big audiences.
That's true. Well, and I think when you see something like Wonder Woman or, you know, you can look at, I think, Bridesmaids a few years ago is a very good example. You know, you have these huge films that are considered sort of, you know, anomalies, and I'm not totally sure why there aren't more of them. There are an awful lot of male superhero movies that I've had to sit through.
Suffer through.
Yeah.
You looked at a study published in July in JAMA Internal Medicine that analyzed salaries of 10,000 physicians employed by medical schools. What did they find?
Well, they found that on average, women made about $50,000 a year less than men.
Are we talking about teachers or work as doctors?
These are people who work as doctors, but they're employed by medical schools, and so their salaries were more easily found. But they, you know, they do work in fields like gynecology and pediatrics, which are largely female, which I mentioned. But really what that study was looking at was the gap that was occurring in specific fields. So orthopedic surgeons, for example, all things being equal, female orthopedic surgeons made $41,000 a year less than men. For oncologists, it was about $38,000. So it's not just, you know, field specific. It is within certain industries.
A listener wrote on Twitter, "What role, if any, do unions play in addressing the wage gap these days?"
I think unions.
A few unions that still survive.
Yeah. well, I think. That's a really good question. When you are talking about unions for low-wage workers, the gap actually tends to be pretty small because, you know, those jobs don't pay much for men or women. You know, when you work at a fast food restaurant, that is pretty much what you're getting. So the unions aren't necessarily pushing for that. They're oftentimes pushing for higher minimum wage in general, which would affect everyone. When you have, you know, manufacturing or something like that, it's still a heavily male-dominated field. So, you know, unions are not necessarily, women are not quite as represented, I think.
The title of your article is, "Why Can't Your Company Just Fix the Gender Wage Gap?" Is it just in their economic interest to not do that?
I would say no.
Because WMYC, our president, is a woman.
Yeah.
I don't know how much she gets paid, but I assume she gets paid well.
I think it is not in their economic interest to not look at this, but it could be publicly embarrassing for them to find something. So you can't really open the hood, look at what's underneath there, and then close the hood and say, whoops. So there are a handful of companies that have done that, have looked under the hood, have talked about what they have found. But primarily, most companies are not doing the sort of wage analysis, which is why the Obama law about you have to report this stuff is so important, because it pushes companies to do what they have to do to look under the hood when they maybe don't want to otherwise.
Are things different in other countries?
Things are different in other countries in a myriad of ways. It depends on what you're talking about. But
are women in France paid the same as men?
Actually,
Germany?
In Europe, the gap actually tends to be slightly bigger. It's still roughly around, it's not enormous, but the U.S., it's actually a bit better. And then you have Nordic countries where the gap is much smaller. Asian countries, the job-to-job gap is actually fairly small, but women are not as well represented in the labor forces there as they are over here.
Claire Suddeth's article is Why Can't Your Company Just Fix the Gender Wage Gap? It is in Bloomberg Business Week. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Well, thanks for having me.